because we don't have, we're running out of time. With respect to Egypt, I'll just talk about, so today we're just going to be discussing the history. We'll not get to what's happening today. With respect to Egypt, the leader of this madhab was basically Muhammad Abdul. Well, Muhammad Abdul was a very close friend of the ruler, of the English ruler Lloyd Cromer. Well, Muhammad Abdul was a very strong admirer of the European civilization. He loved Europe very much. And he said, any time I feel depressed or bad when I'm in Egypt, I just go to Europe and it revives my soul. He loved to see Europe and the Europeans so much. And he said that the only, he said that the only hope for the Egyptians, was to follow the practice and follow the way of the Europeans. And in 1899, because of the British, he was appointed the Mufti of Egypt. Well, this position, of course, he was able to make, to really control the way of thinking and what was going on. Even he had the right to remove people from Al-Azhar. Basically, his aim, and again, we're not talking about his intention, whether his intention was good or bad, whether he understood Islam's intention, it's not important. That's not what I'm talking about. But by what he did, by his writing, we see that basically his aim, his goal, was to interpret the Sharia in such a way, to free it from the old interpretations of the earlier scholars, and to prove that Islam and modern Western civilization, were compatible. Two of his best known fatawa, one of them said that it is halal, or it is legal to make pictures and statues for the Muslims as long as there's no shirk. And in this fatwa, actually nowadays we're still living under the influence of this fatwa. And before Muhammad Abdul, you don't find this fatwa. Even two-dimensional pictures, it was considered haram by the ulama. And that's why when he gave this fatwa, he was opposed by almost all of the ulama at that time. And also he also said that it is halal for Muslims to put their money in the European banks and to get interest. And he also said that it is permissible for Muslims to wear Western clothing. And that was the introduction of pants and these Western style clothing into Egypt. He was also, at the same time, he was convinced of the supremacy of Aql. He said Aql sits in judgment of Deen, and it is Aql who decides what is right and what is wrong in the Deen. And also, of course, he had to read this modern science into the Quran. So, for example, about the jinn, he said that the ulama of old, they used to say that the jinn are living bodies which cannot be seen. He says, but it is permissible to assert that the minute living bodies only recently discovered by means of the microscope and called microbes may well be defined as the jinn. And he is saying that jinn are microbes. This was just recently, you could not see it until we had the microscope. That's his only justification, for saying that jinn are... not just with respect to physical science, but also he said, that we have to adopt the social sciences of the West. And even he tried to prove again that Darwin's theory was compatible with the Quran.
How can he do that?
Please. Why, you don't want to hear the Adhan? We don't have much time. If you want to ask, you can ask.
Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar. Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar. Ashhadu an la ilaha illa Allah. Ashhadu an la ilaha illa Allah. أشهد أن محمد رسول الله أشهد أن محمد رسول الله حي على الصلاة
and very tough for me to finish before the Adhan. That's why I'm trying to finish before the time of the of the Adhan. And to conclude about Muhammad Abdu, and probably one the best conclusion that we can say about him is something that the English ruler Loy Cromer wrote about Muhammad Abdu. And Muhammad Abdu, by the way, he was put in prison for some time. So Loy Cromer said that under British pressure, the ruler pardoned him and then made him a judge. And Abdu recognized the necessity of European assistance in the work of reform. Then he said, that he founded a school of thought in Egypt, which is similar to that established in India by Sir Syed Ahmed Khan. And their task is therefore one of great difficulty, and they deserve all the encouragement and support which we can give them. They are the natural allies of the European reform. Muhammad Abdu actually was used basically by the Europeans to try to spread his version of Islam in Egypt at that time. Muhammad Abdu, of course, was very influential. Included among his students were Qasim Amin, the one who wrote... Actually, it was his first book. Actually, it was Muhammad Abdu who wrote it, probably. But Qasim Amin put his name on it. Well, they wrote it together, at the minimum. Ali Abdul Razak, who was a complete secularist, he said, Islam has nothing to do with government. Taha Hussein, Muhammad Rashid Rida. These were the students of Muhammad Abdu that passed on some of his thoughts. Muhammad, with respect to Muhammad Rashid Rida, after some time, he began to realize that in fact what Muhammad Abdu was teaching was wrong, and he began to long after Muhammad Abdu died, he began to criticize his work and point out some of his mistakes. Well, that laid really the groundwork, those scholars, Muhammad Abdu, the students of Muhammad Abdu, and the students of Sir Syed Ahmed Khan. These are the teachers of the present-day modernists. But we do not have time, to go into the situation of the present-day modernists, what influence they are, what role they're playing today. So I think, just dealing with the history of the modernist or modernist school will be sufficient for today, and then we'll open the floor now for any questions or comments that you may have. So now that we're finished, we can give a title to this. This is the history of the modernist movement before the present time. That's the title of this lecture. So on the tape, you can go back.
What you were mentioned about Muhammad Abdu, Roman and his books,
Muhammad Abdu is not very controversial. Jamal al-Din al-Afghani, that's a different story, which is one of the reasons why I kind of skipped it. But Muhammad Abdu is very clear, there's no real controversy over Muhammad Abdu. I don't know. You mean the next in this series? The next lecture in this series is the situation of this movement at this time. Now. And what are they propagating? What are they propagating today? Obviously, since they're modernists, they cannot propagate the same thing that they propagated 100 years ago. They have to change. They have to keep up with the times. So the next yani one is what are they doing today, and also their influence in the Muslim world, especially the United States. I think when I originally prepared these lectures, it was for a mixed American and foreign audience, so I have quite a bit here about yani their role in the United States today.
First of all, I have to say that yani, it was a big mistake not to give the title during the khutbah. I mean, after the khutbah, I mean,
طيب that's يعني actually this Ahmed Jabour, since he's here, he's supposed to give tafsir tonight. But he refused.
I think I wonder nowadays Muhammad Abdul is like an idol to a lot of people. And the way that he said things, I would assume that there was a lot of opposition to him.
Yes.
How come this
opposition
is
not really known, or not popular in modern day history. Yeah, who opposed him?
Who opposed him?
And I would assume
that there,
and
a lot of people
would. Yeah. Yeah. And there were people like Shakir and his two sons. I keep forgetting who was the father. Muhammad Shakir is the father, and then Ahmed al Mahmoud is his two sons.
Ahmed Shakir, Muhammad
Mahmoud.
Yeah? Muhammad
Mahmoud. Hey, and Muhammad Shakir is the father. Ahmed Shakir is the father? So if Ahmed Shakir opposed him, yani, very, yani, in a very difficult, I mean, not very, in a harsh way. Also, Abdurrahman al Sa'ati, which is Hassan al Banna's father, also opposed him. Yani, but the why you know Muhammad Abdul and you don't know the others, because Muhammad Abdul had the backing of the English government, the Egyptian government, and the ruling yani the upper class. Okay, people like yani the people who were dominating the media or what were popular in the city, yani they were all people of Muhammad Abdul's followers. Yani Sa'd Zaghlul and his wife yani opened a bunch of yani salons for people to come and sit and talk, and yani they so he had the government backing, both the British and the Egyptian government, and he also had yani the backing of the upper class. So yani the upper class that time, they used to travel to Europe and come back and so forth. So therefore yani that's why basically you hear one side of the story, and those yani who opposed him, who didn't really have except for maybe four people following them. And this is the case everywhere.
But what happened
with him? Yeah, he opposed him. And you can find these people who opposed him. Many of them were writers. Many of them are famous. Yeah. But because of his influence and his situation, they were kind of drowned out by... even Muhammad Rashid Rida, if you read his later writings, he opposed him. Yeah. But if you ask anyone, who is Muhammad Rashid Narada, he is the best student of Muhammad Abdul. He wrote yani Tariq al-Imam and so forth, yani the life history of Muhammad Abdul. So yani what you may hear may not necessarily yani represent what was actually going on. Also, for example, Jamaluddin al-Afghani was opposed by many people. Similar situation from him, yani concerning him. Now Jamal al-Din al-Afghani, he's the one where you can't tell what's true and what's false. his life is really confusing. And also because he was so influential, anyone who came after him with any idea, he says, I get this idea from Jamal al-Din al-Afghani. He's my teacher. He's the one who taught me this. You want to give some authority to what you're saying, at that time you say, well, this is what al-Afghani told me. So people were claiming many things that this is Afghani's teaching. Some of them were not true. But even his own personal life, and for example, you hear a lot that he was a pan-Islamist, and he's saying that the Muslim countries should all get together and rise against the West. Actually, he never taught that. And he taught that the Eastern countries, Muslim or non-Muslim, should rise against the rule. Wa alaykum salam wa rahmatullah. Should rise against the rule of the French and the Dutch. He never mentioned English. for some reason. Actually, it was the English who, he was supposed to be killed in Russia. By the way, he believed in assassination as a way of, he was, I guess, the first terrorist in the Muslim world. And he believed in assassination. And he tried to assassinate the ruler of Iran. He was captured in Russia and he was supposed to be put to death. And it was the British government that came and rescued him. No, he didn't say it's next week.
No.
He didn't say that. He didn't say it's next week.
Come on. It's a good topic.
No, these thoughts will be consequent. Yeah, so much. And
one
every week, or it doesn't matter?
No, it doesn't matter.
It is very hard to produce these thoughts are coming from them, like reading and that.
The problem is people don't read what they actually wrote. You know, they just hear about these people. Afghani was a great leader. Many people, they think I named myself after Jamaluddin Afghani. And everyone asks me, "Oh, did you name yourself after Jamal Din?"
It's because we don't see anything coming from Muslim leaders or Muslim ulama regarding this. I've never heard.
Yeah, that's
hear about Rushdie.
No, yeah, that's part of the problem. Also. Even the ones alive today, and some of them are considered the leading. Yani, for example, in the United States, some of them are considered the leading scholars and callers to Islam. But if you actually look at some of their fatwa, some of their things that they wrote and said, you will not believe that this came from those people.
You mentioned in the beginning of the lecture that this is a new movement. Was that
true? I said it's a very old, actually,
Mecca. Yeah, but no, I mean, you said that...
Yani, it is reappearing.
Right, really?
It is, since the turn of the century.
Right.
It has reappeared. Under the influence of the European modernism.
The same form.
Hey, basically putting an apple first.
So now you're going to move to the new people.
Yes. I mean, this was just development. As I said, the students of these people that I mentioned some of their students, they are the teachers of the ones around today.
And that is because the West is feeling that maybe there's also the Ahl Sunnah now is coming up, and that's why maybe they are trying to support this group, or just...
I think regardless of any... It's in their interest, and regardless of whether there's revival among Ahl Sunnah or not, it's in their interest for people to think of themselves as Muslims and be following the way of Europe.
I think they can put more effort if they feel...
Hey, okay, yeah, come on. But even if that didn't... And during the time of Muhammad Abdul, it wasn't very strong.
Right.
And things were actually in a very bad... Jamaluddin al-Qasimi in Syria, Damascus, to be more specific. And he was one of those reformers at the same time who looked at things differently. He said, look, we have lots of problems, but the solution is not following the West completely. The solution is going back to the Quran and Sunnah. Yani the situation in the Muslim world was very bad at that time, from Islamic point of view. But even though it was bad, and really the Muslims weren't doing anything, they still had Muhammad Abdu and these people and supported them and tried to spread this word.
Okay, the question is, one can conclude from his speech that he cannot use his mind.
No, okay, we'll get to that.
Okay,
we'll get to the position of Aql, yani in Islam.
Yeah, because... If something is not against the religion, it's not against the Quran and Sunnah,
yeah.
I think it's okay. And Muhammad was, who was talking about that?
Yeah.
He said, I'm not going to talk about, you know, if you wear a short, you'll pass, or, you know, make it longer, because this is just how to appear. But if you appear inside as a good Muslim, so this is much better than you take care of. If you wear a bag or if you wear a pants and shirt, you know. So, these famous scholars, they are talking about saying something from Western or foreign domestic state of anything. It's not against the Sharia and Sunnah.
No, the problem is that what they're saying is against the Quran and Sunnah.
Some of them. You mentioned some of them when you were talking about jinn or something like that. But you also mentioned he brings the new method of wearing the pants and shirts to the other countries. So,
because it's haram to wear libas al kufar.
Yeah, who said
this? Had a hadith. You cannot appear like the kufar. What do you mean? This hadith of the Prophet.
Well, that's what I said.
So at that time, if someone is wearing a specific dress, you know that he's European and he's non-Muslim. And you know both of these things. And you have that libas al kufar. Someone wears that, you know that he's kafir. Okay? That's the situation in Egypt at that time.
Well,
so he is saying.
If you wear a pants and shirt, so you'd be like a kafir. No.
If the Prophet prohibited us to dress like the kuffar, and he said, whoever appears like a people, he's one of them. Okay?
So, during the time of the Prophet Muhammad, they were wearing pants and shirts.
The point is, if there's a dress which is known to be the dress of the kuffar, you cannot wear it.
Yeah, I know. That's
okay. So in Egypt at that time, the pants and suit were known to be the dress of the kuffar. Well, Muhammad Abdul said, you may wear it, there's no problem with it.
Okay, but this means, the way he's saying it means that he intended for the Muslim people in Egypt to imitate the kuffar, he did. But I don't think he means that, because...
No, his writings are very clear that the Muslims must follow the Europeans in both their aqidah and their akhlaq, in their physical sciences, in their material, their aqidah about the world, not leaving the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, but their belief about the world, the place of aql, philosophy. And he said these things very clearly. There's no question about it. That for the Egyptians to become civilized, he wasn't talking about Muslims in general. He said for the Egyptians to become civilized, they have to follow the way of the Europeans, including akhlaq. Qasim Amin was even more.
Qasim Amin.
Qasim Amin, his book was actually written by Muhammad Abdul. This was Muhammad Abdul's writings, him and Qasim Amin.
The only thing that I'm not convinced about is something is not existing in the era of Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam. That what we used to, even the scholars, you try to find,
No one disagrees with you, on that point.
Yeah. So now we have cars. We don't have cars at the time of the Prophet Muhammad. Now we have guns and chairs. We don't have that at that time. So you will be happy to find you have to have a lot of experience in a lot of reading about these books and Sharia and the Sirah and all that, and then he would.
that's no problem. But to accept something, if it goes against the Quran and Sunnah, to accept something, just because it's the way of some other people and you're going to put that first, this is wrong.
Yeah.
Have you seen?
No.